Thank you. Eat it up. Okay. First of all, thank you very much for the introduction, and it's very, very gratifying to see such a big conference on this topic, because I really feel that this topic, intersectionality, is the cutting edge of feminist theory and scholarship today, and I think the fact that so many people have come to this conference is evidence of this. I'd also like to especially thank Helma Lutz for inviting me, and she's the person I think who's inspired me the most in terms of my thinking about intersectionality and lots of other things. I'm going to be talking about intersectionality today as a traveling theory, and that's also it's against the backdrop of my interest in how feminist theories travel in general. I think many of us have grown up thinking that theories, you know, you read a theory, it's sort of intact, and that's what the theory is about. And I think more and more we're realizing that theories do in fact travel, and when they travel, they change in all kinds of interesting ways, and that it's actually our responsibility as critical theorists to think about these processes of travel and change and include them in our discussions about the theories. So that's what I'm going to do very briefly today with intersectionality. Feminist theory has long been dominated by the contributions of U.S. feminist scholars. Many of us here are European feminist scholars, and we have all made use of these contributions. In fact, most of our most cherished theoretical paradigms have been borrowed from our U.S. sisters. It seems as if all good things in feminism come from the United States. And it is almost as if European feminism has made no important contribution to the production of feminist theory. As editor of the European Journal of Women's Studies, which is devoted to promoting European feminist scholarship, I have very mixed feelings about this tendency to eagerly take up, and some would say even worship, U.S. feminist theory. It is in this spirit that I want to take a look at the concept of intersectionality, which has become enormously popular in feminist theory. It is a typical example of a contribution to feminist theory which started in the United States and then traveled to Europe, where it was taken up with an enthusiasm that even trumped its reception in the United States. Today, I'm going to argue that the European reception of intersectionality was not simply a matter of European feminists taking on the concept. A closer analysis of the travels of intersectionality in Europe shows that the concept went through some interesting changes along the way. In my talk, I want to show that there's much to be learned from the differences in how intersectionality has been theorized on both sides of the Atlantic. Let me start with a brief look at the history of the concept of intersectionality in the United States. Okay, I don't know whether you can see this. Kimberly Crenshaw, as Helma Lutz already said, is generally given credit for having coined the term intersectionality. And there you'll see a photograph of her before you see the real person tomorrow. She introduced a new term to address an old issue. Black feminists, as well as U.S. Third World feminist scholars, had already produced numerous critiques of the neglect of women of color in feminist discourse, and many had advocated the importance of theorizing multiple identities and multiple oppressions. As early as 1977, the Combahee River Collective, a black U.S. feminist lesbian group, issued a stirring and highly influential manifesto in which they argued that gender, race, class, and sexuality should be integral to any feminist analysis of power and domination. So that's 1977. Several years later, the first anthology of black feminist thought appeared with a title that provocatively stated what was at stake with intersectionality. And I think this is really the perfect title. All women are white, all blacks are men, and some of us are brave. By the late 80s, the triad gender, race, class had become a mantra for much of U.S. feminist scholarship. Indeed, one could argue that the most central normative and theoretical concerns in U.S. women's studies today are differences among women and the long and painful legacy of feminism's exclusions. It is within this context that intersectionality emerged as a catchy concept, as Anne Phoenix has called it, promising to deal with several of U.S. feminism's most pressing concerns. These are the promises which the concept of intersectionality made. Okay. First, it promised to address and redress the distressing exclusion of the specific experiences of women of color from early feminist scholarship. It focused on multiple differences based on race, class, and gender, which shape women's lives in different and specific ways. Second, it promised to uncover multiple oppressions by showing how categories of identity converge to produce heightened vulnerabilities in individual women's lives and at all levels of the social order. Third, intersectionality promised to put an end once and for all to the problematic strategy of drawing analogies between the oppression of women and the oppression of people of color. Sexism is like racism, which of course permeated the debate about Clinton and Obama, as you all know, so it's by no means a dead strategy. This strategy of making analogies neglects the different histories and dynamics of sexism and racism as systems of domination. Instead, intersectionality promised to focus on the specific ways that race is gendered and gender is racialized in different contexts. And finally, intersectionality promised a methodology for doing feminist research. Asking the other question became the mainstay of an intersectional perspective. It offered the tantalizing possibility of exposing multiple positions and power inequalities as they appeared in any social practice, institutional arrangement, or cultural representation. Thus, in the U.S., intersectionality is most closely associated with U.S. black feminist theory and critical race studies. It is part of the political project of theorizing the relationship between gender, class, and race. Intersectionality is increasingly being used in the U.S. to explore other marginalized identities, notably of queer sexuality and disability. However, the U.S. feminist debates have been a bit ambivalent about the use of intersectionality in postmodern feminist theory as a helpmeet in deconstructing gender and theorizing multiple identities. In the U.S., intersectionality is first and foremost committed to the political project of uncovering the material effects of racism and sustaining the strategic importance of identity politics. So now let's take a look at what happened to the concept when it traveled to Europe. And here you see several well-known and very familiar-looking European feminist theorists. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a portrait for everyone on the internet, so if you're missing from this, that's why. Intersectionality made its appearance in European women's studies in the mid-90s, particularly in the UK, but also in Scandinavia, Germany, and the Netherlands. It has become a familiar topic in women's studies conferences and postgraduate and graduate courses in feminist theory. Articles and anthologies devoted to the topic of intersectionality have appeared throughout Europe, including and here's a plug, a special issue of the European Journal of Women's Studies devoted entirely to intersectionality, which was edited by Anne Phoenix and Pamela Patinama. Many of the reasons for the popularity of intersectionality in Europe are the same as in the United States. Along with the feminist movement, anti-racist, Marxist, and gay and lesbian movements were all giving voice to subordinated sexualities, class injustices, and other subaltern realities. It was also part of the political project of finding ways to decenter gender and theorize it in a more comprehensive and inclusive way. But there have also been some important differences in the way intersectionality has been taken up in European contexts. These differences are linked to the different histories of domination and exclusion, as well as the current multicultural realities of Europe, particularly in the wake of processes of migration and relocation throughout Europe. Intersectionality has therefore not simply been taken up by European feminists, but its meaning has been changed and elaborated so that it can address the issues deemed important in a European context. Let us take a look at some of the debates which the concept of intersectionality has engendered within European feminism and focus on some of the differences with the earlier US debates. The first difference between European and US debates about intersectionality concerns the centrality and meaning of the category race. While race was the starting point and focus of US scholarship on intersectionality, European feminists, perhaps with the exception of the UK, and I think there are four reasons we could talk about, the discussion has been a bit different, but European feminists have been reluctant to use the term, regarding it as hopelessly tainted. Given the history of the term and its role in justifying the genocide of millions of racialized others, it is unthinkable for many European feminists that an affirmative notion of race could ever be employed as a basis for a progressive politics of identity. And Axelie Knapp has made this argument very nicely in several of her articles. For many European feminists, ethnicity is regarded as more appropriate than race to feminist theorists of identity. In contrast to race, which is imbued with all the baggage of biological determinism and essentialism, ethnicity seems better suited to explaining cultural differences, religious beliefs, or adherence to traditions, all considered more relevant to understanding processes of racialization in contemporary European multicultural society. The widespread and diverse patterns of migration throughout Europe, from economic migration to refugees from various conflict situations, as well as polarization around issues of secularization and Islam in the wake of 9/11, have made categories like religion, tradition, and national belonging seem more important to many European feminists for understanding the current inequalities and exclusions than race. Thus, European feminist scholars have often replaced the category of race, which was so central to the US discussions of intersectionality, with ethnicity or even with cultural difference. The second difference in the debates concerned the issue of which and how many categories were required for an intersectional analysis. In the United States, intersectionality has primarily been about the triad race, class, and gender. While most European feminist theorists would agree that the big three are usually relevant in most contexts, although not everyone would agree what they actually mean, they are reluctant to prioritize specific categories in intersectional analysis. Debates in European feminism are often about how to decide which categories to include and which to leave behind when analyzing a specific context or practice. Some European feminist scholars are in favor of casting a broad net when doing intersectional analysis. For example, Helma Lutz has come up with no less than 14 categories of difference: sexuality, nation state, culture, ability, age, sedentariness, origin, just to name a few. The list is potentially endless, however, something which has caused other European feminist scholars to worry about knowing when to stop. They argue that the most important question is deciding which differences are most meaningful or relevant in a specific context. Thus, the European debates about multiple categories have broadened the U.S. focus on gender, race, class, making the analysis of intersectionality a much more complicated but also contextualized endeavor. The third difference concerns the desirability of conceptualizing intersectionality as a crossroads of converging oppressions. In the U.S., the image of crossroads introduced by Kimberly Crenshaw defined intersectionality as what occurs when a woman from a minority group tries to navigate the main crossing in the city. The main highway is the racism road. One cross street can be colonialism, then patriarch street, and so on and so forth. While this image of the crossroads is highly evocative, many European feminist scholars, and Neera Yuval Davis is one of the most important in this respect, found it problematic because it seemed to imply a separate systems approach to social divisions, an approach that had already been rejected way back in the 70s in the wake of the Marxism-feminism debate. Taking up a Foucauldian paradigm of power, which has been very popular within European feminism, European debates on intersectionality instead have advocated an elaboration of the notion of crossroads, and an exploration of the quality of the intersections, as well as of the power dynamics which emerged through them. The fourth difference in European debates concerns the issue of agency. In the U.S., intersectionality has primarily been used to uncover vulnerabilities and constraints which are increased by multiple identities. The motto seems to be, the longer the list of differences, the heavier the burden. This focus on difference as a source of disempowerment has been criticized by many European feminists who argue that it neglects individual agency and therefore stands in the way of a more sophisticated approach to identity. Within European feminist debates, attention shifted from how structures of racism, class structure, or sexism determine individual identities and practices to how individuals ongoingly and flexibly negotiate their multiple identities in the context of their everyday lives. The one-sided focus on vulnerabilities and exclusions produced by intersecting identities gave way to a focus on how these intersections might enable possibilities for action, subversion, or even empowerment. European feminist scholars see intersectionality as a way to disrupt notions of identity that were overly static or binary, or to, in the words of Judith Butler, make some trouble. This elaboration of intersectionality fits neatly with the postmodern politics of location, which allows for new ways of thinking about multiple identities in a globalizing world. In conclusion, the concept of intersectionality has been a political and a methodological helpmeet for feminists on both sides of the Atlantic. However, the trajectories of its reception have been different. In the U.S., intersectionality was primarily linked to the political project of understanding the effects of gender, class, and race on women's identities, experiences, and struggles for empowerment. In contrast, European feminist scholarship embraced intersectionality as a welcome methodological tool in the postmodern project of deconstructing gender and developing a more sophisticated theory of identity. Often critical of the primacy given to women's experiences and identity politics in the U.S., European debates about intersectionality have been heavily influenced by post-structuralist theory, post-colonial theory and diaspora studies, queer theory, as well as Foucauldian-inspired perspectives on power. Intersectionality meshed with their engagement in these critical projects without falling into the traps of essentialism, systems approaches to power, or a simplified politics of identity, all cardinal sins in European feminist scholarship. It will come as no surprise to you that I believe that the European debates on intersectionality can contribute to making the U.S. discussions on intersectionality more sophisticated. They introduce a more complex notion of race, as well as a recognition of other relevant differences in specific contexts. They show why it is important not only to uncover the convergences of differences, but also to explore their dynamics. They broaden the discussion of difference to include the ways differences can be enabling and empowering, as well as disabling and constraining. Most importantly, however, the specific contribution of the European debates is that they show the potential of intersectionality to become a feminist methodology par excellence, a methodology ideally suited to deconstructing essentialist constructions of identity, decentering dominant discourses, and producing situated, critically reflexive feminist knowledge. However, lest you think that this learning process is a one-way street, I also believe that we European feminists have something to learn from the U.S. debates on intersectionality. The insistence of U.S. feminist theorists on keeping the political relevance of intersectionality at the forefront of the debate can provide a useful reminder to us European feminists. We sometimes run the risk of producing theories that lack a political bite. We are sometimes guilty of a too easy assimilation of difference in our theories, as, to quote Nina Lika, a pillow on which white feminists can rest their heads without having to think through their own positions of power. Paying attention to the origins of intersectionality as a theory intended for understanding the positions of the most vulnerable in any context can help keep European feminist theory politically and normatively on track. And it can remind European feminists of the continued necessity of examining our own historical and present complicities in racialized, nationalist, and global structures of power. In the final analysis, I believe that intersectionality promises feminist scholars on both sides of the Atlantic the best of all possible worlds, a political project and a feminist methodology. So let me end my talk with an impassioned plea for a conception of intersectionality that allows us to have our cake and eat it too. Thank you.